So in preparing for camp this year, because I usually do a Christian Living message for camp, the camp theme this year is Courage Under Fire. So what I did is I went out to Life, Hope, and Truth. I read all of the articles they have on courage. And the most interesting one to me was from the EEI, the Encourage, Equip, Inspire. Is that it? Yeah. And it was talking about how to help your kids develop courage. And I thought that was neat considering what we were going to do for the camp theme this year. But then I got to thinking about it and I asked the question, and I'll ask the question to you, what is courage? If you were to define it, how would you define courage? Is courage simply standing up for what you believe is right? So I'll say it another way. If I stand up for what I believe is right, is that courage? Others might call that arrogance or even stupidity. I've had people tell me that you still follow that Herbert Armstrong guy. That's so stupid. Where I would defend that and think it was courageous, somebody else would say you're defending stupidity. What is courage? I know of people who right now are picketing out in the streets, courageously, I use that term in quotes, defending an immoral lifestyle. Is that courage? What is the definition of courage? I'd like for all of us, if we would, to think back to when we first started to understand God's laws. Now, for some of you, you were adults when God called you. For a lot of you in this room, you grew up in the church. Doesn't matter. It still applies. Think about when you first started to understand it. I grew up in the church, too. I was like 7 or so when I started, so I was pretty young. And it hit me when I was about, I think I was 15. And all of a sudden, it clicked. And I started to think about this really seriously. When was the first time that you had to stand up in faith and face courageously to take your first step toward following God's laws? I have a couple of examples here. All of these, by the way, happened to people that are either sitting in this room or are in webcast land right now, because I've talked with you. For some, it was going to a boss and stating that you can't work on the Sabbath. That's a big deal. And I've had people come up to me back in Dallas. I've had people come up to me in this area since I moved and said, how do I do that? How do I approach I don't know how to do this. This is new to me. What do I say? What if he or she says you're fired? And I was able to relate some stories that I've had not only from my own life in the past, but from others that have gone through that. You know, sometimes you turn down a promotion. That was an example that I had. Was able to go to a senior management position that would have been far exceed any income that I had ever had in my life. But it required me to come in one Saturday a month, and I had to turn that down. Others stood up for the truth, lost their jobs, but ended up getting something even better, maybe even closer to home, et cetera. So there are a lot of stories about them. Some of you, I know this has happened, had to go to your mate and tell him or her that you were going to start keeping the Sabbath. Or even worse, start tithing. Oh boy, because when you've got someone that's in the church and someone that's not in the church, and you've got this, you know, I'm not going to have a Christmas tree in the house anymore. I'm going to start keeping the Sabbath. That can be a real challenge to stand up to that and say, you know, I've got to face this person that I love that's living in the house that sleeps beside me, and they may not like that. It takes courage. How about for those of you that are teenagers? Going to the school administration to tell them that you're going to take the feast off. That I remember that as a challenge. My mom, getting ahead of myself here, but my mom did not go to school with me. She printed out the forms, which is almost word for word back in my day that they are today. And she printed out a bunch and said, go give these to your teachers. And I had to explain to every one of my teachers why I was taking the feast off. And I had some that went, I think that... You probably have experienced it too. This is great. Your homework assignment while you're there is write me a 5-page paper on what it was like to be in Italy or do all these things that we did. Okay. I had other teachers that said, religion, you are stupid. And then they would go through and talk about how dumb I was for doing this. And that was something that I had to face. So going to school administration. How about telling your friends that you can't go out on Friday night? Because, and hear this, it's what you believe rather than my parents won't let me. Saying my parents won't let me is not standing up and courage, saying, this is what I believe. And that's standing up in courage. How about the first Sabbath that you ever went to church, if you can remember it, for those that came as adults? I'll tell the story of our first Sabbath. So mom decides that she's going to stand up in courage against dad's wishes. Dad had absolutely forbid it. And it took a year or two before she finally said, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to step out in faith and I'm going to go. So that Sabbath, mom didn't drive and didn't have any money. So a local family that had three girls and a boy, the Starnes, you remember some of the Starnes from college, came and picked us up in this boat of a, I'm trying to think of what they're called, but the station wagons that like had the back seats that faced the wrong way. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, these long, long, long things. You could seat 10 or 12 people in there. And they came and picked us up. So we got out of the house successfully, and I thought, phew, made it. Got all the way to the car. I hop in the back seat. I close the door, and I look up, and there's my dad. He's come out of the car, and he's knocking on the window of the driver's side window. So Mr. Starnes rolls the window down, and Dad starts yelling at him. You're breaking my family up, and you're this, and you're that, and they're having this discussion, which was not really a discussion. And I thought, what's going to happen? And my mom just simply looked down and said, Dick, that was my father's name, we're going. Rolled the window up and left Dad standing there in the front lawn. Didn't know what it was going to be like when I got home, but I figured it wouldn't be good. We did not go to the feast that year because we didn't have any money. I think this was like May or June, something like that, and mom didn't have a job, let alone the ability to save second tithe. So instead of getting assistance, the minister said, why don't you stay home this year, which we did. Next year we went. I think I might have related this story before to you, but when we came back from the feast, Dad didn't talk to me for 2 days. I was 9 years old. What do I know at 9 years old why my father isn't speaking to me? He didn't talk to mom for 2 weeks. He was so upset that we were doing this. And yet mom stood up in faith, in courage, and said, I'm going to do this. We had doubts about what it would be like when we got home. We feared what it would be like when we got home. I had one experience. I probably was in maybe sophomore year where the school decided that there was too much truancy. So instead of, trying to figure out where all these kids were, what they said was, you have 5 days that you can miss. For whatever reason, we don't care. But on day six, you flunk every one of your classes. And here I am going to the feast for 8 days. So mom sent me to the principal's office. Go tell them what's going on. And I did. Principal said, day six, we're flunking you for every class. So I took that home, and mom said, okay. Then mom went and talked to them. And I remember mom saying, and they told mom the same thing. She said, okay, fine. Here is my attorney's name and phone number. He'll be giving you a call tomorrow morning. Wait. And all of a sudden, the whole story changed. And I was the only person in the school that was granted abstinence or whatever from that particular program. Standing up like that's not easy. Parents, I will mention this, and this was in the article as well from the EEI. Children need the opportunity to manage uncertainties themselves. So don't always be the one to step in and do it for them. Let them handle the first step themselves. It helps teach them to stand up and say, this is what we're going to do. It gives them confidence in making decisions. Courage is trusting God even though you may have doubts and fears. We're going to talk a lot about doubts and fears as we go through the sermon today. One of the things that I think is good for us as parents or even grandparents, remind children of when they were blessed. You know, I've said this before to our kids. We had you blessed as a kid. There are angels around you. You can't see them, but they're there. And maybe even relate the story of Elisha's servant in 2 Kings 6. You remember that? Where he couldn't see. How are we gonna do this? The army's too big. And Elisha said, God, let him see what's out there. And all of a sudden, this young man could see all of these angels. And I don't even know if Elisha could see them. He didn't need to. He knew they were there. But it helped build faith in him. Discuss times when God has intervened for you with your kids. We all, I mean, we've done this before. I've sat down with you and we've talked about miracles that we know God intervened and saved us. Maybe it's an automobile accident that should have happened, or something to do with job or school. That helps build faith in our children. What I want to do today, and what I will be going through when I get to camp, I want to start in Deuteronomy chapter 31, and I want to read about a time when several people had to stand up in faith and with courage and make the right decision. So let's start by turning to Deuteronomy chapter 31. Israel is on the verge of entering unknown territory. Have you ever moved? Have you ever been a teenager that had to leave the school with all your friends and go to a new school and you didn't know anybody? I mean, this is kind of what the Israelites faced. They were going into a land that they had never been in before. They didn't know anything about it. Deuteronomy 31, verse 1. Then Moses went and spoke all these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I am 120 years old. Now, as you read through this, I'd like for you to consider something. I know a lot of you are too young to remember this. I remember Mr. Armstrong giving his last sermon in late 1985 and saying, brethren, this is probably my last sermon. Now, I don't know if any of you remember that or not. I don't know if that went out to the local areas or not, but we were in Pasadena at the time. And I remember that. This reminds me of that. Moses said to them, I am 120 years old. I can no longer go out and come in. And also, the Eternal has told me, you will not cross over this Jordan. The Eternal, your God, himself crosses over before you. He will destroy these nations from before you, and you will dispossess them. Now, I'm going to come back to that in just a minute, but look at the promise that he said. I'll take care of this if you have faith and if you have courage and if you trust me. We're going to see in just a minute how he did that. Verse 6, and the Eternal will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og. We'll talk about those in a moment. And the kings of the Amorites and their land when he destroyed them. And the Eternal will give them over to you that you may do to them according to every commandment which I have commanded you. So he tells them in advance, this is it. You're going to be going into an area that you don't know. And I'm not going to be going there with you. Now, they had gotten used to Moses as their leader. They didn't always like the way he led, but after 40 years in the wilderness, they kind of came to the conclusion that this is the man, and he's going to be taking us over. Now they're facing hostile cities. They're facing hostile people. They're losing the leadership of Moses. As we read in a little bit, they're going to have to put their trust in Moses' assistant, Joshua. This would have produced, I'm sure, throughout all of the land of Israel, doubts and fears. And they would have had lots of things that they were concerned about. And yet, let's look at verse 6. This is what Moses says to them. Be of strong and of good courage. Don't fear nor be afraid of them. In other words, if you have courage, you won't have to worry about doubts and fears. Be strong and of good courage, and don't fear nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes before you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. So when you're stepping into something that is unknown, that can be a real trial. Every year we have to watch videos before we go to camp. And one of the videos that we watch every year is there are going to be some young kids who come to camp for the first time. It'll be the first time they're away from mom and dad, and they're going to be afraid. And some of these young children may cry themselves to sleep at night. They may have some other issues. Can you imagine being Israel and spending, so all the 20 and below are still alive, but they wandered for 40 years in the wilderness, and now they're going in to a land that they don't know anything about. And we'll read more about that in just a moment. I also want to make it clear that God didn't go into the land, clear all of the bad people out, and then say, okay, the land's yours to take, everyone's gone. No, they had to go in and they had to follow God's plan. Remember how Jericho worked? Would that have been, if you were the general, is that how you would have planned it? Okay, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to march around the city once, And we're going to do that for 6 days. And here's day three. And here's day four. And I could just imagine the people of Israel going, what is he doing? Right? And then on day seven, we're going to do this, and all the walls are going to fall, and we're going to take the city. I just would imagine, if I were there, I probably would have been saying, right. And yet, that's how God planned it. And each city, he had a different idea of how they were supposed to do this. That would have taken courage for them to follow that. Now, let's go to verse 7. Then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel. And he says the exact same thing. Now he's just talking to one individual. Be strong and of good courage, for you must go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, that you shall cause them to inherit it. And the Eternal, he is the one who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear nor be dismayed. Don't have doubts and fears. So the same thing that he said to Israel, he now says to Joshua. Now, what do you think was on Joshua's mind? He had followed Moses. Now, he had been around, and we'll see that as we read the story. But he's going to be taking on a new responsibility. He's going to be leading how many people? Millions. And it says here, you will be the one to cause them to inherit the land. How do I do that? I'm used to having Moses around telling me what to do, and he's not going to be around anymore. I imagine that would have caused some doubts and fears in Joshua's mind as well. And yet God said, be strong and of good courage. How would he do that without Moses? I want to spend the rest of the sermon today just talking about Joshua and what led him up to being able to lead the children of Israel into the land of Canaan, into the promised land. What happened in his life that helped him to develop the courage to be able to take on this role? So we're going to go all the way back. I'd like to review the challenges that Joshua faced in his life. Let's start in Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13. You'll remember this story. When I do this for the kids at camp, I was telling Marlis on the way up here, I'll probably have some PowerPoint charts to go with it to make it a little more, not understandable, but visual for the kids. Numbers 13, verse 1 and 2. The Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send one man, every one a leader from among them. So what we see here is 12 men were going to be sent into the land of Canaan. Now, why did God do this? And the answer may surprise you because it surprised me. And if I get surprised, sometimes I think, well, maybe nobody else saw this either. Why did God send them in? Hold your place here. I want to go to Deuteronomy chapter 1. We'll come right back here. I just want to read one verse or a couple of verses. Deuteronomy chapter 1. So the book of Deuteronomy is as they're about to enter Canaan. So this is 40 years later. And Moses is looking back on the time when the 12 spies were sent into the land. Verse 1, these are the words which Moses spoke to Israel on this side of the Jordan, plain opposite from where they were going to be going. Now drop down to verse 22. And let's see where this idea came up. Verse 22, Moses is talking to Israel. And every one of you came near to me and said, let us send men before us and let them search out the land for us and bring back word to us of the way by which we should go up and of the cities into which we shall come. So whose idea was it to send people into the promised land to spy it out? It actually was the people's. And Moses thought it was a good idea, and God blessed it and said, okay, fine, let's do that. But I want you to notice here, When the people of Israel said, let's go spy out the land, there were two specific things that they were supposed to come back and report on. So let's look at what that was. Verse 22 again. Let us send men and search out the land before us and bring back word to what? The way in which we should go up. So they were going to go up and figure out the route. They did not have GPS back in those days, so they had to figure out, well, which city would we take first? What route are we going to go? Where are the roads? Where are the main arteries? What's the thoroughfares? How are we going to do this? And the second thing was, as we look through all of the cities that we're, and notice the way they say it, and of the cities into which we shall come. There's no hesitation there. God's going to give all of these to us. So let's do a little reconnaissance and figure out not only the way we're to go, but what all of these cities are going to be like. So maybe we can decide which one we want to settle in. This is all extremely positive. All right, now let's go back to Numbers chapter 13. So these 12 were supposed to find the best route and to look at the cities. So when they got back, what route did they suggest to Moses? Okay, that's what they're supposed to be doing. Let's look at verse 21. So they went up and they spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob, near the entrance to Hamath. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron and all of these cities that they're supposed to see. And they saw the descendants of Anak. Uh-oh. Now we've got a problem. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. And the descendants of Anak were there. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Verse 23, then they came to the valley of Eshcol. And there they cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes, so heavy that they had to carry it between two people on a pole. That's pretty impressive. I don't know if Mr. Petrie's ever had a group of grapes so big that he couldn't carry them and had to get his, call his brother and say, come over and help me get this clump of grapes into the house. These are big deals. And in telling that story, I lost my place. Hang on. They carried it between them on a pole. Also, they brought some of the pomegranates and the figs. And the place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster, which the men of Israel cut down there. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. So they've come back. They've come back with the land is obviously producing great. So what is it that they're going to tell the people? Verse 31. Sorry, let's go back to let's go to verse 26. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation, and they showed them the fruit of the land, and they said, we went into the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit. Nevertheless, now remember what they were supposed to come back and tell them. What route will we go? We're ready to go. Let's enter the land. Here's the route that we suggest you take. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Why is that an issue? God was the one that was going to... You remember these people saw the miracle of the manna. They had heard the stories of what happened 40 years earlier when God had promised them that they would be able to cross the Red Sea. They're going to see in just a little while that they've got another series of miracles that they're going to get while they're doing this. The cities are fortified and very strong. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. So all of a sudden now there's this problem. I know we're supposed to come back and tell you the route. I know we're supposed to come back and tell you about the cities. But these cities are serious, folks, and the descendants of Anak are there. They were probably the ones that we would consider progenitors, perhaps, of the Philistines or Goliath. These were big, big, big people. Verse 30, then Caleb quieted them before Moses and said, no, we need to go up right now, and we need to take possession of this because God has given it to us. Verse 31, but the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than us. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy is a land that devours its inhabitants. Well, now, wait a minute. They just came back with all these great stories and all grapes and pomegranates and figs, and yet the stories turned sour. And all the people whom we saw are men of great stature. And we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak, came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in their sight. Okay, now we're getting a little hyperbole here. a grasshopper to a man is not annexed to the children of Israel, but that's they were so afraid that this is what happened to them. So again, what route did they suggest? The route that they suggested was, we shouldn't be doing this at all. And this great idea that they had to go out and spy out the land, which Moses and God agreed to, now turns into virtually open rebellion. They had doubts and fears. They were not ready to step up or to step out in faith and trust and have the courage that they needed to, even though that's exactly what Moses had told them to. Have courage. Don't have doubts and fears. God will give you this land. And they got sidetracked. Numbers chapter 14. So what happens to the congregation? So all the congregation of Israel lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. Can you imagine millions of people and they're all crying all night long? I mean, this you get the idea that these were a very scared group of people right now. All of the doubts and fears that have come into their mind. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron and the whole congregation, if we had only died in the land of Egypt, or if we had only died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land only to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let's select a leader and go back. All right, so their idea of going into the land turns into, we need to find another leader, we need to kick this Moses guy out, and we need to go back into slavery. Can you imagine that amount of fear that they thought it would be better for? Remember back in the, for those of you that are young, you won't remember this. Remember the phrase, better red than dead? For those of you that are older than dirt like me, you'll remember what that, there was a period of time where we were in a Cold War against the Soviet Union, and it was, is communism going to last, or is democracy going to take over? And there were some people that were so fearful of an attack from the Soviet Union that, well, it would be better for us if we just became communists than to get into World War III. You know, better red than dead. Red was the color of the Communist Party. This is almost like this. Let's select a leader and let's go back to Egypt. Let's become communists so we don't have to fight World War III. Verse 5, then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. All right, so here we have 10 of the 12 have given a bad report. It seems like all of the children of Israel are now against this idea of going in. I want you to notice now verse 6. Now, I want you to think about the courage that Joshua had to do this. Not only is he facing 10 of the 12 guys that gave a different story, but he's facing the entire congregation that's ready to kick Moses out and to select a leader and go back. Verse 6. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephthah, who were among those who spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. Notice verse 8. This is the key. If the Lord delights in us, I'm going to read into that. If you'll stop complaining about what God's telling us to do, if God is pleased with our attitude, with our approach, and et cetera, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us. So the very thing that Moses told Joshua, and the very thing that he would have told the people of Israel. Yes, there's a group of people in there. Yes, there are cities there, but I will take care of this. I will fight this fight for you. If the Lord delights in us, he will bring us to this land, a land which flows in milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of this land, for they are our bread, and their protection has departed from them, and the Eternal is with us. Do not fear. Don't have doubts and fears. Have courage. How did Joshua have the courage to do this? This is very interesting. And you know what? Sometimes we stop and we don't read any further, but I want you to notice the result of Joshua saying this in verse 10. All the congregation said to stone them with stones. Joshua faced execution for standing up and saying what God told him to do. Would you have the courage to stand up if someone said, if you don't give up this way of life, you will lose your life? It's going to take courage. And we'll see toward the end of the sermon, things like that will be happening toward the end of this age. All the congregation said to stone them with stones. But notice what happens. The glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. God himself intervened and stopped them from stoning Joshua and Caleb. So they tried to get them back on track, talking about how amazing the land is, and if we will just please God and not rebel against him, we'll get this. Now, I don't know that any of us have ever faced stoning literally. Some of you maybe in school got some stones thrown at you once or twice, I don't know. But we still face stones verbally, don't we? Standing up in the face of my science teacher back in ninth grade and him calling me stupid because I was going to the Feast of Tabernacles. That was a verbal stone. Some of us have to face that. I want you to notice what happened, not only to the 10, which gave a bad report, but to the children of Israel who said they were going to stone Joshua. Let's look at what God is able to do. Go down to verse 26. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I have heard the complaints which the children of Israel make against me. So say to them, 'As I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I do now to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me will fall in the wilderness, all of you who are numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except for Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. You shall by no means enter the land which I swore to give you.'" So the people that were going to stone Joshua, what happened to them? They died. And guess who didn't? Joshua and Caleb, because they stood in the gap. Let's go a little further, and let's look at verse 36. "Now the men whom Moses had sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation complain against them by bringing a bad report of the land to the other 10, those very men who brought the evil report of the land died by a plague before the Lord. But Joshua, verse 38, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, remained alive." So the people that brought the bad report, they died. Joshua and Caleb lived. The people that were going to stone Joshua and Caleb died in the wilderness. Joshua and Caleb lived. The courage that they faced was something that gave them the ability to stand up in the face of doubt and fear and to handle this trial that came before them. But let's go even further back. What gave Joshua the faith and the courage to stand in the gap at this point in time? Because this isn't the first mention of Joshua in the scripture. Let's go back even further. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus chapter 17. This is the first mention of Joshua. Starting in verse 8. "Now Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim." This is before they're going into the land of Israel. They're still coming out from Mount Sinai. They're heading up toward that direction, and they meet a foe. "Moses then says to Joshua," first mention of this man, "'Choose us some men and go out and fight with Amalek. And tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand.'" So we see here that Joshua now is going to lead a group of people, an army. There was not an army before this. He just was taking a group of people that probably had swords and spears, and they're going to go out and fight against Amalek, which probably was a known military force at the time. So you've got a standing army fighting a bunch of ex-slaves that are trying to head in and take over their territory. Verse 10, "So Joshua did as Moses said, and they fought with Amalek." And you've heard this story before, but let's go through this. "Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. But when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed." So he's got this staff over his hand. I don't know if you've ever tried to do this or not. That used to be, by the way, a torture back in the days where they would captive prisoners would be made to hold something over the top of their head. And if they let their hands down, they'd be beaten. So this would have been, in one sense, a form of torture for him to keep his hands up like that. And so it was, verse 12, "But Moses' hands became heavy. So they took a stone and they put it under him and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hand, one on one side and one on the other. And his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Now, you have to read into this a little bit because there's something to this story that perhaps you're not thinking about. There's a subtext here. Joshua was chosen to lead and fight against the Amalekites. Why was Joshua chosen? Now, you remember back, for those of you that have seen the movie The Ten Commandments, you remember Joshua was what? What did he do for a profession? He was a, well, close. He was a stonecutter. Remember that? And he fell in love with Lily of the water girl. That's pure hogwash. That was not in the book. We don't know what Joshua did, but he somehow stood out, and Moses said, I want you to lead the people. He wasn't a soldier. He was a slave. A slave would not have been taught how to be a soldier. So he's going out now, and he's all he knows is that Moses is going to go up on the top of a hill with a staff. And that's all he knows. He's fighting a battle. He doesn't see up on the hill. All he knows is there are times when I'm doing good and times when I'm doing bad. He's not looking up on the hills. Is Moses' hands up? Uh-oh, they're down. We better retreat. He's not seeing any of this. All he's doing is he's fighting a battle, and he doesn't know what's happening behind him. And I'll show you that that's actually what happened. He would have no way of knowing what was happening up on the hilltop. Notice verse 14. This is after Joshua defeated Amalek and comes back to the people. Then the Eternal said to Moses, write this for a memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua. Joshua didn't know what was happening. So that evening, Joshua, as a very young man, would have sat down with Moses and said, what happened today? And Moses and the people who were writing this down, the scribes, said, the reason why you won was. So that helped develop courage. Did he have doubts and fears while he was on the... Yeah, because there were times when he was winning and times when he wasn't. But later on, like a parent telling his kid, you know, there were times when I know God protected me. Moses would have sat down and said, this is how God protected you. This is why you won. That would have developed faith and courage in Joshua. He would have learned faith through this event. He stepped out in faith. He stepped out in courage. And God performed a miracle to back up his courage. Now let's go to Exodus chapter 24. This is the next time we hear about Joshua. Exodus chapter 24. So Joshua has now proven himself to be a leader. He stepped out in faith when many other people were not able to step out in faith. Chapter 24, verse 1. Now he came to Moses. Come up to the Eternal, you and Aaron and Nadab and Abihu and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. So there's a group of people, say, I don't know, I probably will definitely have to have a drawing, but Israel's camped over here, and Mount Sinai is over here, and God says, take you and the three, I'm not going to remember their names, and 70 elders, and you come partway, and you stop. So here's the 70 elders, the camp of Israel's back here, and here's a mountain, and Moses is going to be going up here. 70 elders of Israel, but a worship from afar. Don't let them come all the way up. Verse 2, and Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near me, nor shall the people go up with him. Now let's make sure I get my thing right. So at least 73 people start up this mountain, but they have to worship from afar. Now let's drop down to verse 9. Moses went up, also Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. So they were close enough to be able to actually see God on the mountain. So they've gone partway up. And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone, and it was like the very heavens in its clarity. They were close enough to be able to see the being who would become Jesus Christ. We know that in person. But the nobles of the children of Israel did not lay his hand. But on the nobles of the children of Israel, he did not lay his hands. They saw God, and they ate and drank. Then the Eternal said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and the commandments which I have written, that you may teach them. So Moses, verse 13, arose with his assistant Joshua. So by this time, Joshua now is Moses' right hand. He's proven himself in battle through his courage, through his pushing through doubts and fears. He now has become the right-hand assistant to Moses. So Moses and Joshua go up the mountain to God. Have you ever read that before? Did you realize that Joshua went up with Moses, at least partway? It's possible that Joshua was there and saw all of it. It doesn't say how far he got, but we know that he went up further than the 70. Verse 14, and he said to the elders, wait here for us, Moses and Joshua, till we come back to you. And indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has a difficulty, let him go to them. And Moses went up to the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. And the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. So we have this period of time now where Moses and Joshua go further up the mountain. Again, due to his courage and faith and obedience to God, he now is Moses' assistant. So what happens when they come down? You've got to go all the way to chapter 32 to see the end of the story. So let's go forward to chapter 32. In this intervening time, we don't hear anything about Joshua. We just know that he went up with Moses. Verse 15, Moses is now on his way back down. Did you ever see Mel Brooks' version of it where he came down to speak to the children of Israel and he said, God gave me these 15 commandments. And he's got three tablets and he drops one. He says, I mean 10. God made these 10 commandments. That's not how it happened. Moses turned and went down the mountain, and the two tablets of the testimony were in his hand. And the tablets were written on both sides, one on one side and one on the other. And the tablets were the work of God, and the writings were the writing of God engraved in the tablets. So they're coming down the mountain, verse 17. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as he shouted, he said to Moses, there's a noise of war in the camp. But Moses said, this is not the noise of the shout of victory, nor the noise of defeat, but I hear the sound of singing. They were far enough up the mountain, including Joshua, that he didn't know what was going on. These aren't the 70 that were down where Moses said, if anybody has a problem, they can go to these guys and work it out. Joshua had obviously gone up the mountain with God, and he returned with Moses. So he would have had, as it were, direct knowledge of what was going on in the mountain. Let's go forward to chapter 33. And let's see what else would have helped Joshua in learning to become faithful to God. So Joshua is now seeing all of this. He's seeing the Israelites rebel. He's seeing them when he came down from the mountain with Moses, he would have seen this golden calf. We don't hear the story of Joshua there, but what would that have done to him? Remember, he's the one that would step in the gap when they were going to spy out the camp in a while. Verse 7, so Moses took his tent and pitched it outside the camp, far from the camp, and called it the Tabernacle of Meeting. Did you realize that? Before there was a Tabernacle of Meeting, there was a Tabernacle of Meeting, and it was Moses' tent. I don't know that he had a pup tent. I don't know how big it was, but it was where he slept at night, and that was where Moses went. And he went outside the camp. Why? Because God's presence would be there and wouldn't be around the Israelites. And it came to pass that everyone who sought the Lord went out to this Tabernacle of Meeting, which was outside the camp. And so it was, whenever Moses went out of the tabernacle, all the people arose, and each man stood at his tent door and watched Moses till he had gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass, when Moses entered the tabernacle, that the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Eternal talked with Moses. So we see now that they see this pillar of cloud come down and sit on Moses' tent while Moses talked to God. But who else was there? Verse 11, so the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. And when he returned to the camp, his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, the young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. So Joshua was also there when God would talk face to face with Moses. Because of his faith in God, he was promoted to Moses' assistant. As Moses' assistant, he would have gone up the mountain and seen things. When he came back and God spoke face to face, Joshua was there. through the faith that he had, through pushing through doubts and fears, he became more and more courageous. And one piece of faith led to another until he was able eventually to lead the children of Israel. All right, now let's go finally back to Numbers chapter 27, when he is named the leader of the children of Israel that are going to take them into the promised land. Numbers chapter 27. And that is not what I want. I'm in Numbers 12. Numbers 27. And let's start in verse 12. Finally, Joshua is going to be given the ultimate leadership position. Numbers 27, verse 12. Now the Eternal said to Moses, "Go up into this mount and see the land which I have given to the children of Israel." Marlis and I, by the way, have been there. This is a place that they would now call Mount Nebo. And on a clear day, you can stand up there on the top of that hill and you can see the city of Jerusalem, even though it's miles and miles away. The day we went, it wasn't very clear, so we couldn't see all the way there. But from Mount Nebo, you could see the city of Jericho, which was the first place that that Joshua would be taking them to fight. It's very interesting to be up in that position. Verse 13, "And when you have seen it, you will be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother was gathered. For in the wilderness of Zin, during the strife of the congregation, you rebelled against my command to hallow me at the waters before their eyes." Verse 15, "Then Moses spoke to the Lord and to the Eternal, saying, 'Let the Eternal, the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation who may go out before them and go in before them and may lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be like sheep which have no shepherd.'" Moses said, okay, if I'm going to die, someone needs to take my place. Who is going to be the one? Who is qualified? Who has the faith? Who has the courage to lead the people of Israel after Moses dies? Verse 18, "And the Eternal said to Moses, 'Take Joshua, the son of Nun, with you, a man in whom is the Spirit.'" Why did he have the Spirit of God? Would God have given the Spirit to someone who wasn't courageous, who didn't have faith, who allowed his doubts and fears to cause him to pull back? No, this was a man with whom God saw, this is a man who can be a receptacle of my Spirit. "Lay your hand on him, set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and inaugurate him in their sight." In other words, he was being ordained into this position. "And you shall give some of your authority to him, that all the congregation of Israel may be obedient. He will stand before Eleazar the priest, who will inquire before the Lord for him by the judgment of the Urim. And at his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, he and all the children of Israel with him. And Moses did as the Eternal commanded him, and he took Joshua, set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and he laid hands on him and inaugurated or anointed him to be the new leader." You know, when you look at this, Moses, about to die, pleads with God to make sure that there is a successor who would be able to lead these people. Remember all of the grief that they gave Moses along the way. He knew this would have to be a pretty strong individual. And Joshua, through overcoming his doubts and fears, became that man. And Joshua then is inaugurated. Deuteronomy chapter 34, in verse 9, we see this again. Deuteronomy 34 and verse 9. "Now Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him, and the children of Israel heeded him and did as the Eternal had commanded Moses." So we look at this, Moses dies, and Joshua takes his place. Now, what is the first thing that Joshua does? Joshua chapter 1 and in verse 1, I find this interesting. I want you to think back to what God said to Moses in anointing Joshua, what God said to Joshua before sending him out, and what God said to all of the people of Israel. Joshua fulfilled his test. Did he have doubts and fears? Absolutely, he would have had doubts and fears. But he overcame them by having the courage to stand up and say, God has promised this, and I will do it. Now, as the leader of the people, look at what he's now saying to the people. Joshua 1 and verse 1. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Eternal, it came to pass that the Eternal spoke to Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, even as I said to Moses. From the wilderness of Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all of the land of the Hittites, all the way down to the great sea, going down to the sun, should be your territory. By the way, that is a much bigger territory than the land of Israel right now. They were promised a large land. I saw a video one time on from the Euphrates all the way down to the Nile and the area that would be now Saudi Arabia, at least part of Egypt, Lebanon, Syria, all of that was promised to Israel, and yet they ended up only taking a portion of it. Verse 5, no man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Notice what God says to Joshua. Again, the same thing. Be strong and of good courage. He has to remind him. This is not going to be an easy job. This is something that Joshua had prepared for. It was something he had trained for. And yet, even with the training, God had to remind him or re-remind him. That's probably not a word. That you have got to be strong and have good courage because there will come times when you're going to need it. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you will divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Don't turn to the right hand, don't turn to the left hand, that you may prosper wherever you go. So be strong and of good courage. Don't be afraid. Don't be filled with doubts and fears. God will go before you. His courage came from years of obedience to God. His courage came from seeing the hand of God perform miracles, just like many of you have seen in your life. And you can tell your kids those same stories. I know God protected you. I know that God protected us. And here are those stories. Yet even at that, God still had to remind him to stay courageous. And he has to tell us the same thing. God didn't remove their obstacles. He gave them a way for those obstacles to be removed. But through the trials, through the doubts and fears, he was there for them, and it proved an ability for them to learn faith and to be courageous. Joshua chapter 23, two more quick scriptures, and then we're done. Joshua 23. In verse 3, this is now the other side of the story. Remember when Moses was 120 years old and was about to die, and he said his thing. Now here we have Joshua. Joshua chapter 23, starting in verse 3. Actually, in verse 2, I am old and advanced in age. You've seen all that the Eternal your God has done to all these nations because of you, for the Eternal your God, he's the one that fought for you. If you're looking back, Israel, at what's happened, it's not because you were some great, mighty war power. You were slaves. But somehow you started winning all of these battles. Verse 4, see, I have divided to you by lot those nations that remain to be an inheritance to the tribes from Jordan with all the nations that I have cut off as far as the great sea westward. And the Eternal your God will expel them from before you and drive them out of your sight, and you will possess it. Verse 6, he passes on the same thing that God gave to him. He's passing on to the people. Therefore, be courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, lest you turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left. And that's something for us today. God is telling us the same thing. And it's what we're going to be teaching our kids at camp this year. We have to remain faithful. We have to remain courageous. This is a very strange country that we live in right now. And let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 3, and we'll read one final verse. Deuteronomy 3, verse 28, and then we'll bring this to a close. This is a reminder of what we read earlier. Deuteronomy 3, verse 28. But command Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him. Encourage. That's a word that comes from the root word of to be courageous. It means to leave, to inspire with courage something that otherwise might be hard for them to learn of. Command Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he will go over before this people and he will cause them to inherit the land which you will see. Brethren, we need to do the same thing. Here we are. This is now 2022. I did not think that we would ever make it to 2022, and here we are. And who knows how much longer we have, but things are getting pretty strange out there, had you not noticed. There's a really interesting article. I did a sermon back in June of 2001 called Watch, and it was based on an article in Life Open Truth by Mike Bennett called Five Prophetic Trends to Watch. I want to rehearse those real quickly because this is what's happening right now. As the world is getting crazier and crazier, as we have our doubts and fears, we need to learn from these to become courageous. Here's the first one. Watch threats to human existence. Remember in the Olivet Prophecy, it said that if Christ didn't return, there would be no flesh saved alive. At the very end, it will be to the place where humanity is going to destroy itself. And God will have to step in and stop that. That's how bad it's going to get. We will see that happen. Second point, watch the Middle East. Israel, Iran, Pakistan, the Knesset. Did you know that the Israeli government just collapsed and they have to redo that again? Did you know that Iran is had military exercises to, in case they would, I'm trying to say this right. They did a military exercise that promoted the idea of one of these days we're going to invade Israel, so let's practice. And so they did an entire military exercise to practice their future invasion of Israel. They're planning it right now. Israel, in retaliation, said, if Iran attacks us, we need to be prepared for that. And they did their own military exercises to say, how will we defend an attack from Iran that is coming? Can you imagine one stray bullet that would have happened during that time that could have sent this whole powder keg off? It was that close. And this was just last week. This stuff happens, and it's all around us. Sometimes we're so busy with what we're doing in our life that we're not paying attention, but we need to watch what's going on in the Middle East. Watch Europe. There's a king of the north coming. NATO right now is going through a big change. Sweden and Finland and some others are deciding whether or not they want to become a part of NATO, and it is causing a big stir in Russia and the Ukraine right now. The Pope has started to make overtures toward the area. We need to pull this together. We need to pull this together. We need to pull this together. There's things that are happening right now, and we need to watch that. Fourth part of his article, watch moral trends. Duh, that's like the one thing that we all are seeing in spades right now, and that's a big deal. As you watch the United States go further and further downhill, are you going to be filled with doubts and fears, or are you going to be filled with courage, knowing that this will come to an end, but the end, it's like reading, as I said the other day, it's like reading the end of the book before you get there, and you know what the end of the story is. And the fifth one was to watch the ride of the four horsemen. If you remember what they are, religious deception, that's become huge. Wars, famines, pestilences, pandemics, that is going to become more and more and more. I was telling, I think it was Pat Simon today, I read yesterday that 1 in 20 people in Scotland have the coronavirus, this new strain, right now. Not 20%, 1 in 20. It's 5%. But still, it's still there. The pandemic is still on. And who knows what the next few years are going to bring. So as these intensify, we have to remain strong. Events like this can cause doubts and fears, but those same events can also bring courage and faith. Think about what the 12, when they went to spy out the land. Some of them came back with doubts and fears. Two of them came back with faith and courage. It was the same event, and yet it was handled differently depending upon how they saw those events. We've been told what to look for, we've been shown miracles, and we know what's coming. And we know it will be hard. Who is your favorite courageous biblical figure. I started thinking about this. Esther, Ruth, Naomi. I mean, there's so many examples. Maybe as we go through some tough times, maybe you do your own personal study. Who's your favorite courageous person? And go back and do a study as I did on Joshua. This helped me immensely just in this last week. Study them because it'll help us build our own courage.